This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, he came out with a little bit of shoulder fatigue. So, you know, we're going to get some tests done, and we'll hopefully, keeping our fingers crossed, that everything's okay there. Because he was absolutely cruising and so efficient and moving the ball to both sides of the plate. But, yeah, we're hoping for the best tomorrow.
Just fatigue. I think it was precautionary. Evaluate it tomorrow, see how I feel after sleeping tonight.
You heard from Brandon Hyde, and you heard from Zach Eflin. By the way, happy birthday, Zach Eflin. He turns 31 today, and last night he was cruising.
I know what he wants for his birthday.
Yeah, he wants a good shoulder.
MRI?
Yeah. 6 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 1 strikeout, only threw 73 pitches. And I know it set me off a little when Yennier Cano came in to pitch the 7th. What the heck's going on? Well, we found out why after the game. Shoulder fatigue. He says it's precautionary. We will find out later today, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the last thing this team could stand to lose right now is the one sort of starter you can bank on, right? I mean, this guy is good for a quality start pretty much whenever he puts an Orioles uniform on. And given the uncertainty about so many of the other guys and given what they've already lost, this would be a devastating blow. This early in the season, for someone who dealt with this early in his Orioles career last year after the trade, and then we all thought something was up last start of the regular season into the playoffs, and there was a real quick hook in the playoffs.
He didn't look right.
No. So you've just started this marathon. I don't know, guys. Like, I think he's going to get shut down for some period of time. Either way, I almost feel like,
at the very least, I think he goes on the IL.
Right? Like he misses a couple starts, yes. And you try to mitigate this and keep it from becoming something that could really threaten the season. And maybe we've already reached that point. But like, when the Rays have like 5 pitchers on the IL and they trade their best pitcher who still has a year of control, you know, and then the guy ends up on the IL shortly after he gets here, it does make the conspiracy theorist in me wonder if they already saw something going on with this shoulder. But the fact that this isn't isolated, this is sort of like what the same stuff we heard at the end of last season, and just the tone of Hyde's voice, like that, my initial reaction to that was, oh, bleep. Just in real time, everything about not just what he said, but how he said it, I'm like, this team can't catch a break.
Oh, it's devastating. Because, look, is Zach Eflin an ace? No, but God,
He's their ace. Essentially,
he's Chris Tillman in the day.
But the consistency that he's provided since he's put on an Orioles uniform has been awesome. He's got 10 quality starts in 12 starts since coming over here from Tampa Bay, and you alluded to it, Jason. He got placed on the IL, the 15-day IL, late August last year with right shoulder inflammation, so who knows if that's the correlation there, but it's not good. I mean, at this point, because it bumps everybody up. Now Charlie Morton, we're talking about him being their number one.
They don't have 5 starters.
Exactly.
Bringing Brandon Young up.
Off day Thursday.
Off day Monday.
And then there's an off day again the week after that. I think there's 1 week coming up I looked at where there's like 2 off days.
They can get away with it for a bit given this schedule. But it's not like Kyle Gibson threw 45 pitches in live BP over the weekend. Grayson Rodriguez, he had a side session yesterday in Arizona. They're still a ways away.
I'll say this. Hearing Eflin, and it's not the same. To me, I don't listen to Eflin talk and Grayson Rodriguez talk and feel the same way. I feel like Eflin, he understands his body a little better. I felt a little better hearing him say, it's precautionary and we'll see. I did. Now,
yeah, no, he was much more nonchalant about it than the skipper.
Yes.
And it's he knows his body. Yes. And he's been around a long time. But that still doesn't mean that they don't need to shut him down as a precaution for several weeks.
Could
because
be.
We're barely into April, and Suarez just got moved to the 60-day IL.
Yeah, we may not
and
see him.
Like, again, don't even try to sell me on Grayson and Bradish and how many innings they could provide. It's pretty bleak already. It's pretty bleak already. So I don't think they can afford him, hey, we'll just try to give us 4 or 5 the next time out. Like, I don't think you can start playing those games.
So Brandon Young
come on
down?
They can't have this flare up. I don't know who else it would be. I mean, for me, it's Young, or like if the Contreras kid wasn't built up a ton in the spring, but he has started throughout his minor league career and in the majors some. I mean, that's sort of what I was thinking. Brandon Young's had 2 great starts in Norfolk. He's got some deception with his delivery. You know, they're high on him. I think he probably tops out as a reliever. You know, I can see this being a Mike Bauman situation where he's a starter till he's not.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's not a whole lot of options. Like there's just not.
The good news is you don't need to make a move immediately because, as we said, there's an off day Thursday, there's an off day Monday, there's an off day the following Monday. So you have 3 off days in the next, what is that, 10 days or whatever, 11 days?
12 days minus 2.
I hate to be a negative Nelly here, but like I feel like best case scenario is he goes on the 15-day IL.
Yes.
They shut him down for 2 weeks and he's back. Like just to let him reset a little bit, let the shoulder, if they say, hey, it's just a little inflamed, let it calm down. But I still think he's gone for 2 weeks. Like, I think that's best case.
I would absolutely agree. I think you're really courting potential disaster if you don't err decidedly on the side of caution. And I mean, again, they built the oldest rotation in the majors. That this wasn't thrust upon them. This wasn't an edict from the owner. This is the path they chose to go. There's inherent danger in that.
And this is the guy that you can least afford to lose long term. So you have to handle this situation with kid gloves, considering we're 2 weeks into the season. You can't be aggressive here. I think he's got to just at least be on the 15-day, and then if he's ready at that point, come back.
But, I mean, at some point, do you have to, like, we're not even 3 weeks into this.
Yeah.
And they've dealt with all this. Like, do you need to start getting aggressive and just you stay on the phone with whoever the hell the Marlins GM is now until you get Sandy Alcantara? Yeah. Like, who are we, like, you're already threading a needle. And we've played not even 4 series.
Hey, they traded Daz Cameron for that guy yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, do you need to get real proactive, like yesterday, in terms of trying to just be on the front of mind? I'm not saying the trade's got to happen now, but we've seen big trades happen in May in this league. That you are front of mind, that the Marlins think, I got Elias in my back pocket, and he really wants this guy, and I'm going to use the next 4 or 5 starts from this guy whose changeup looked a lot better the second start than the first, and I'm going to build up what I can build up, and then I'm going to squeeze everything I can get. All the stuff that I wanted when we had the Norby Rogers discussions last offseason, which it wasn't just them.
No.
They were talking about every pitcher on the Marlins staff. We pick up where we left off, and like, if you really believe in your lineup, then you better be ready to make that trade yesterday. Because the baseball gods are telling you, you don't have nearly enough quantity or quality of starting pitching.
Well, I would have hoped that those conversations have already happened, even prior to this injury, but now they got to ramp up. Am I expecting them to make a move in the month of April? Quite frankly, I would be shocked just considering their track record, but those conversations need
like
to happen.
Like the Twins look like a disaster again. They're trying to sell the team. Probably the team's not evaluated for not getting the valuations that they want to sell it for. People aren't coming to the games. It's looking bad. Guys are hurt again. Like, do they really want to play Pablo Lopez? Like, how long do they want to pay Pablo Lopez? Like, I would think everybody at the warehouse would have a better beat on that than any other front office in the league. I'd be talking to them every day.
We have a pretty big Tuesday show. We get started guest-wise, and trust me, we'll talk about the other parts of last night's game coming up next. The way these guys hit, we will get to that coming up next. But Orioles, game two of a three-game set against the Diamondbacks. We get started guest-wise. Diamondbacks assistant GM Amiel Saude is going to join us at 2:30. He is a Baltimore guy, a Pikesville High guy. We'll catch up with him at 2:30. Pete Prisco, CBS Sports. We're 2 weeks and 2 days away from the start of the NFL draft. We'll get his thoughts on the NFL draft at 4 o'clock. Plus, when's his top 100 players coming out? And is Lamar Jackson going to be ahead of Aaron Rodgers this year on that list? That's a question.
That will be something.
Yeah, because he was not a year ago, if you remember.
I believe he had like a couple of like mid-tier left tackles, I think, ahead of like Lamar last year.
Yeah,
and it was very controversial.
And is Kyle Hamilton going to be ahead of Sauce Gardner?
Mm.
Another question for Pete. We got to get to the bottom of that. Oh, Mike Bordick, Baltimore baseball tonight. He is part of our coverage. He's an Oriole Hall of Famer. We'll talk with him at 4:30. And Chad Ryder, draft expert, NFL.com. We'll get his thoughts on the draft at 5.
Yeah, draft is approaching. We will dig into certain positions we think the Ravens could double down on. Start to look at certain individuals who might make sense for them. And maybe we'll get a Zach Eflin update. If there is any news on Zach Eflin between now and 6 p.m., we will get it to you expeditiously.
Yeah, well, I would think around 5 o'clock we'll probably hear from the skip, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah, because remember the 3 hours behind, but let's hope we hear about 5 o'clock. But coming up next, bats were alive in the desert last night. All the young dudes next here on The Fan.
Oh, Hurt buries this one to right field. That ball is way gone. The Orioles' first home run of the road trip. Ryan O'Hearn's first home run, first RBI of the year. Up in the zone there. Off the glove of the third baseman Suarez. That's an opposite field knock for Heston Kerstad, and the Orioles have a couple of one-out base runners. Can they remain patient? Mountcastle strokes one to center. It's a big base hit. It's going to score two. Break the back and break the spirit of Zach Gallen in one short stroke.
Some highlights courtesy of Kevin Brown on Masson, and the Orioles bats, they came alive a little bit last night against Zach Gallen. They had an opportunity for a big inning early, weren't able to do that, but key hits from Ryan O'Hearn, Ryan Mountcastle, Gunnar Henderson looks back, a big RBI knock from Adley Rutschman. The bats, I was impressed last night. Heston Kerstad.
Super impressive. This was a team that looked up for the challenge. This looked like a team that did read their scouting reports and were locked in, and they had a plan and they had an approach. And when I've said it for 2 years, when they just want to hit line drives the other way, they can wear people out. They can be that Uber lineup that, you know, people want to bestow upon them, but you've got to earn it and re-earn it over the course of a marathon. And they default to poolside power home run stroke far too often, but this was awesome. And they pounded a curveball that the Yankees couldn't touch from Zach Gallen, and the league hasn't really touched in a couple years. And this is a dude who got nothing but swing and miss and 13 strikeouts on a cold night in the Bronx 5 days ago, and they were on him from the first inning through the fifth.
Before, Bone, I get your thoughts. Brandon Hyde, after the game, talks about the offense.
I just thought our at-bats, the first five innings were absolutely fantastic off Gallen. That's some of our best at-bats of the year, just how patient we were, how we didn't chase, everything we kind of talked about before the game. Guys put into play tonight. We went to sleep a little bit after the fifth, but off Gallen, I thought that our at-bats were absolutely outstanding.
That Mountcastle bone, that bat where you got the base hit up the middle, that was great.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up, where you made them pay. Said should have grounded into a double play. Tawa ended up booting the ball. It's 3-1, two outs. Ryan
that ball was scalded, though.
Oh, it was. It was. But, I mean,
if that ball does not hit right at somebody, that ball might get to the wall.
But Mountcastle coming up and in a two-strike situation, two-out situation, driving in those two runs, that was massive. And Mountcastle, man, he's six for his last 12.
Well, and he was hitting the ball really hard with bad luck before that, which is kind of the story of his career. No, what he did, taking a pitcher's pitch that low, for Mountcastle's a big kid, and getting down there and getting the barrel on it there and then driving through the ball up the middle, like, it's master class. How about Heston going opposite field again the other way? Like, let's let that become contagious. And look, for me, this was the cleanest, most entertaining baseball game they played all year, and I don't even know that it was particularly close. From fielding to defense to being locked in, offensive approach, quality at-bats throughout the lineup. Like, this was what I'd like to see become Orioles baseball.
Well, how about Gunnar Henderson? Two hits. We had our first bat throw after a walk.
Yeah, disgusting walk.
And he stole two bags.
Yeah, on Moreno, who's got a pretty good arm. They were more aggressive on the base paths than Arizona. Like, that's another reason why I really enjoyed watching that baseball game. And again, I think it was their best effort of the season. They do. I said it before. I'll say it again. I think they're a team that needs to get stuff going early, because when it's not their night, it kind of doesn't become their night collectively. And when they make a pitcher work and get a starter going in the first inning a little bit, that tends to become contagious too. They were content to play unselfish baseball, really, is what it was at its core. Like, I'm going to do what I have to do to move this guy over. And if I also get a base hit and an RBI out of it, so be it. But I'm going to understand the assignment, especially when I get to two strikes. And that's something that drives me crazy about this team, because you can go back from last year, from June through the playoff series, and the two-strike approach is the same as as trying to ambush a fastball first pitch of the count. Like, you've got to really play for your team when you get behind in the count. And that's something I'm going to be watching very closely this season. And frankly, I think it was pretty horrible through most of the first 10 games. And last night, and you heard Hyde allude to it, it's clear they had a little talking to before that game, and everybody bought in. Now stay bought in.
Yeah, much different approach. And they were able to score four of the five runs without Homer. Ryan O'Hearn with that homer with two outs, coincidentally.
He hit the ball hard twice.
Yes, he did. He hammered it. But you brought up Gunnar Henderson stealing two bags, and Belway Ben Hall, during his analyst corner last night on Baltimore Baseball Tonight, brought up the lack of stolen base attempts, because how much did we hear Brandon Hyde talk about
lip
that?
Lip service.
Heading into last night, they had only six stolen base attempts, which only five other MLB teams had fewer stolen base attempts than the Orioles. Four successful. Gunnar Henderson getting two last night. You'd like to see them be more aggressive on the base paths.
The crazy thing about that, because I was on an Ellie De La Cruz stolen base that never happened a couple games ago. Uh-huh. The Reds were like right there with the Orioles in fewest stolen base attempts, and it kind of struck me as a corollary, because a young, aggressive team with too much swing and miss when it goes bad, but you'd think with some of those young athletic players, you would at least try to run yourself
exactly in.
Like, because remember, the Reds went three straight games, they lost 1-0. So it's like, when you get somebody on base, you'd think you'd push the issue a little bit.
Yeah.
And we talk about the Orioles' feast or famine offense, you'd think there'd be a little more of that.
Adley Rutschman did not have a great game, but I loved his approach on the RBI base hits. Yeah.
Quality at-bats.
And he worked a walk.
Yeah. No, I don't have any issues with him right now whatsoever. In fact, we're doing a six-pack much later in the show about things that we're most enthused about. He will factor into that. Like, you can't get the outcomes you want all the time, but if you do have a process and an approach that looks like it's more than drop to one knee and see if I can hit a ball 500 feet, your slumps are going to be truncated, and your success over a large sample size is going to be greater. So, yeah, he's faced a real tough pitcher last night. I like what he looks like from the left side and the right side. And frankly, he's hit, it's, again, very small sample size, But he's hit better when he catches this year than he has in years past. So let's let that continue.
Yeah, it's night and day difference from last year to this year for Adley Rutschman. And for the first time this season, seeing Adley drive in Gunnar Henderson was a nice sight to see.
Orioles and Diamondbacks, game two of a three-game series tonight at 9:40. But Baltimore baseball tonight with Bone and Jim Hunter at 6 o'clock right here on the Fan. Charlie Morton and Merrill Kelly. And coming up next, the assistant GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks, he's a Pikesville guy. His name is Amiel Salde, and he joins us next here on The Fan. Orioles defeat the Diamondbacks 5-1 last night. Back in action again tonight. It's a 9:40 first pitch Baltimore baseball tonight with Tim Barbalays and Jim Hunter at 6 o'clock here on The Fan. And let's talk some Diamondbacks baseballs. We head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Assistant General Manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks and a Pikesville man is Amiel Salde joins us now. And Amiel, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. Before we get to the baseball, more importantly, did you just enter the Pikesville High Hall of Fame?
They were reaching pretty far down to find somebody for the Hall of Fame. So somehow I got picked out. But yes, I did.
Oh, that's awesome.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Was it for your work at Mike's Pizza?
Yeah, well, they didn't know about that. Oh. But if they did, I was definitely one of the best delivery drivers.
Well, Amiel, you guys brought in a friend of the Orioles and Corbin Burns this offseason. Starting pitching a little bit down last year. What has it been like having Burns in that clubhouse?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, you know, you guys probably got a chance to see him for a year. He's a true pro. He does think a little differently. He does it his own way, which is nice. He doesn't throw sides between starts, and some of the guys just, you know, watch and learn from him. But yeah, he's been great for, you know, actually been great for Zach and Merrill, but also been great for some of the young guys. Leads by example. He's really smart, very, you know, in fact, I was in D.C. this weekend, saw him kind of locked in a room planning for his start. So it's been good to see. He's a true pro.
Well, another guy on your staff who we know from around here, especially his time with the Bowie Bay Sox for me, Eduardo Rodriguez, and we get caught up in our bubbles right in here. Everybody's talking about all the Orioles pitching injuries, but it's a baseball-wide thing, and you guys dealt with it shortly after signing him last year. How difficult was that for you guys and for him, and how is he coming along?
Yeah, he's pitched great this year. He's you know, he's actually made probably two or three bad pitches that he got clipped on. Mm-hmm. But he punched out a bunch of guys and really settled into the game. He's been awesome. He, you know, last year was a little disappointing. I think he came in trying to do a little bit too much. And as we know in spring training, if you put the pedal down and you do too much, it can kind of bite you. You know, he got injured his last start in the spring. And then I think he tried to push it and re-injured himself in mid-April. We lost him for about 3 or 4 months, but it's good to have him in the rotation. He's a stabilizer, and he's fun to be around.
We're talking with Amiel Salde. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. I'm curious. I want to follow up on something Jason asked Amiel, and that's about injuries, and they are just the reality of baseball. Like, when you and General Manager Mike Hazen, I wondered, you guys have conversations that, like, we know injuries are going to happen, so we just don't know who it's going to be, so let's be as aggressive about putting this roster together as possible so we can mitigate those things when they do happen?
Yes, I mean, especially with pitching. You know, I think the big name everybody heard about this offseason was Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah.
And, you know, we held on to Jordan Montgomery for the simple fact that we felt like he was going to return back to 2023 form. And we knew we were going to end up with some pitching injuries at some point. Unfortunately, Jordan was the one that got injured, and so he wasn't able to reclaim that. But I think with pitching, you could never have too much pitching. And, you know, I always say the best teams, you know, sometimes have to make really tough decisions with some of their young pitchers, especially, you know, guys that maybe should be in the big leagues, but you have to send down. We had one last night who pitched the back end of the game in Ryan Nelson, who's one of the best starting pitchers in the big leagues last year in the second half. And he's in the bullpen for us. But we know at some point we're going to take on more injury, and you got to have a ton of depth.
Amiel, you guys led the majors in runs scored last year. Despite Corbin Carroll taking a bit of a step back from 2023, he's off to a hot start already. I'm assuming you guys were expecting this bounce back.
Yeah, he really struggled in the first half. He found his groove towards the second half and really didn't slow down. And we saw a little bit of it in the spring too. He's such an elite player. He's a preparer. He wants to be great, and he is going to be great. Our offense has sputtered a little bit this year. We haven't had the same offensive outputs that we've had that we had last year, and we kind of knew we were going to have some level of regression. But hopefully we hit our stride. I know for you guys, maybe in a couple of days we'll hit our offensive stride. but yeah, hopefully we start to hit our stride and some guys start really locking in.
Well, you guys have done a really good job of locking in some of your talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously you got Corbin Carroll done early. Brandon Faught, that just went down. Ketel Marte. I know all these situations are different and every negotiation sort of has its own, you know, soul or back and forth or cadence. But, like, in general, how like, the seeds of some of these eventual extensions, how early are they sowed? How sort of long and back and forth can some of these conversations be until they get to a point where everybody is willing to commit?
Yeah, I mean, it varies. I mean, Brandon Faught, we ended up getting done in a few days. And you know, Perdomo, who he locked up a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, you know, we started last year talking to them. I think the most important thing is try it when you lock up your young players is having a strong relationship with them, believing in the person, not just the player, because that's really important. And so we've tried to identify some of those guys that we've tried to sign some other people that we weren't able to, but we tried to find some of the group of players that we really believe in and are going to be the core of our team moving forward. And, you know, we don't want to win the deal. We want to make it a fair deal. We want the player to feel really good about it. And so, I feel like we've done that in multiple cases. So hopefully it works out for us.
I mean, how important is ownership commitment? It just from afar, it seems like, and I think it's Ken Kendrick's owner. He seems very committed to helping you guys have the resources to do what you want to get done.
Yeah, he really wants to win. He's super competitive. You know, I think watching what the Dodgers do really drives him to want to beat the Dodgers even more. And he knows we can't spend the same way. We're going to have to do some things under the hood. And just like kind of the Orioles are in the AL East, I mean, I think there's, you know, there are going to be some financial behemoths that they're not going to really be able to fight with. But they do things really well under the hood and, you know, in the minor leagues. And I think it puts them in a position to compete. And that's kind of the way we are. You know, we've kind of pushed a lot of our chips in this year, and hopefully we can go for it. We have a lot of free agents coming off the books. But, yeah, Ken's been awesome. He's been great to us. And, you know, we're fortunate to have an owner that really wants to win.
Amiel, you mentioned the Dodgers, and it's not just them in the NL West. The Padres and Giants are off to strong starts as well. And this has been a really competitive division for a while now. But this year it might be an even bigger level. Just how competitive do you think this division is going to be over 162 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, we're in the two toughest divisions, the AL East and the NL West. I think our guys feed off of that. They know they just have to worry about themselves. If they play good baseball, you know, we have a chance to look. We won 89 games last year and didn't get into the playoffs, so. We know we have to win a lot of games to get in, especially in the National League. But we'll get, you know, those guys have gotten off to strong starts. They have really good teams. But we're going to get our opportunities to play them, and we have to take care of business when we do. But it's more fun to have it that way, to be honest, like to have teams that, you know, are really competitive and the games really matter.
You guys were in the Bronx about a week ago. I will admit I didn't know the term torpedo bat until everybody in that lineup started hitting home runs right around, you know, the first game of the season. Maybe you guys don't call them that. Maybe that's not the real industry term, but those bats that are shaped like a torpedo and the technology behind them, when did that first get on your radar?
Probably around the same time it got on your radar.
Okay.
I didn't know about them until after the first or second game. To be honest, I mean, I'm not really involved in the equipment
sure.
that these guys purchase. But the, you know, the manufacturers, they come into spring training and they probably went into every clubhouse. And some of our guys bought the bats too. In fact, we have some guys that, they don't use them now, but have them, have ordered them before they became a big thing. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be interesting. I said this to a number of people that have asked me about it. The idea makes sense. You still have to be a good hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that some of the hitters in New York that are getting a lot of publicity are great hitters. Anthony Volpe is a really good player. And, you know, Goldie and Ellie De La Cruz is using them. These guys are really good players. So I think you still have to be a really good hitter. And, you know, we'll see. We'll give it some time to see what happens. But it's not for everybody. But it's fun. It's a fun story to read.
I mean, more important stuff. How often do you get back east? I think you're a Ravens fan. How close are you paying attention? You're getting ready for the draft. How much can you pay attention?
I pay attention enough. I am a Ravens fan. I'm a huge Terps fan, so this is like the first year in a long time that that I felt like it was my spring college basketball was relevant, and I was upset and mad and had a lot of emotion.
Yes. Do you hate Kevin Willard as much as we do right now?
We call him the bald rat.
Yeah, bald rat.
Yeah. I'll talk to you guys offline about that.
All right, fair enough.
Are you excited
about
Buzz Williams?
Your secrets are safe with us.
Yes.
Are you excited about Buzz Williams?
Yeah, I'm very excited about Buzz Williams. Look, I think that the most important thing that I've said to some of my friends is, like, we're actually upset about what's happening, and we haven't had that type of emotion in so many years. And to be able to, like, follow the transfer portal and care about who comes in and out is, you know, it feels like I'm back in – you know, early 2000s. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited, and I'm excited for the Ravens and excited for the Terps. And I don't get back east that much, but I do follow a lot. So,
I'm Al Saldé, assistant GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Hey, the Diamondbacks play the Orioles every year. We should make this a tradition when they play. We always catch up with you. It's fun.
Yeah, sure thing. You guys just reach out to me, and I'll be there for you.
Thank you, sir. Best of luck.
Tell the Frumans I said hello.
You might talk to them before I do after this call. So,
take care.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I'm Al Saldé, assistant GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks. When we come back, it's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM. What you got?
For the first time in my life, I won the bracket
Bones
challenge.
Bones rich!
I won two bracket challenges. We're going to break down the national championship, Florida, Houston. And hey, have you ever won a bracket challenge? You ever won a ton of money doing so? 410-583-1057. We'll get into it next on The Fan.
It's T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
I had never won a bracket challenge in my life until last night, where I won a couple of them. I had Florida winning it all. I had the Final Four. I had it all. I was not feeling great at the beginning of this game. Well, honestly, for the vast majority of this game, because Houston led for pretty much all of it. And the game was playing out in Houston's favor, where it was ugly basketball. Walter Clayton Jr. did nothing offensively for the first 30, 35 minutes of this game. They were trailing by 11 points with 13 and a half minutes to go. Houston was in the bonus with 15 minutes to go, 16 minutes to go. Florida got teed up twice, and then the officiating definitely went in the Gators' favor because Houston picked up three fouls in about 9 seconds. Walter Clayton Jr. ended up making some big-time plays late, and Houston, uncharacteristically, the last three possessions ended in turnovers. They didn't get a shot off. In their last three possessions, they went scoreless in the remaining 2:05, and Florida did exactly what they have been doing this the whole tournament, where it's not pretty, but as long as they're in it, they'll come back. And I saw this tweet that was pretty crazy. The team leading at the final TV timeout lost all three Final Four games.
Wow.
Great games, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was sloppy.
I mean,
but
it was fun.
Drama-filled games.
It was drama-filled.
I'm not going to say great games.
They were compelling.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. But there were also times where you felt like you were watching a slog. It was a rock fight in the first quarter.
It was
quarter,
a total rock
or first
fight.
Quarter. First half. It was a tale of two halves with the officiating.
Ref show.
It was a total ref show, and it went in my favor, so thank you. I appreciate it,
Bone,
refs.
You don't have to apologize.
I'm not apologizing.
We told
I'm
Bone to hedge. He didn't hedge, and he still won.
Well, I would if I could. Oh. But it ended up working out. So Florida won. Have you guys ever won a bracket challenge?
So it's funny. The first time I ever did it, my freshman year at LaSalle, I won.
Really?
It was one of the guys in the dorm. That was UNLV won. Duke got to the Final Four. It was Georgia Tech with Lethal Weapon 3, Kenny Anderson, Brian Scott, and Dennis Scott and Brian Oliver. And I had all three of them in the Final Four, and I won. I hadn't won again. I think I won Jeremy's a few years. Yeah, when Virginia won it all.
Okay.
I won Jeremy. So, but those are the only two times I've won.
Yeah, I won. I used to run the one in high school, and I think I won that one year. Might have won once in college, but I mean, that wasn't like big money.
No,
or anything.
No.
And for many years, I didn't even get in. And then this year, I...
You're back in. But you did the Survivor thing, which I think is a cool concept.
Yeah, it would have been cooler if Duke had beat Houston. I would have won, turned $20 into $1,333, but that didn't happen.
Ben and I were on opposite sides, and Ben, you can air it all out now. I'm with you. The officiating was...
The officiating didn't turn the ball. Like, the biggest for me was L.J. Cryer's turnover. They were up one with 50 seconds left. He drives baseline and does whatever he did, and then Elijah Martin goes to the free throw line, knocks him down. It was unfortunate because it's like, if they win, I would have won a lot. But I'm in so many different things, and it's
hard to keep track.
It is. I'm in a college basketball player fantasy March Madness pool. Won that.
Nice.
Had LJ Cryer. I was down two heading into last night. I had Cryer and Condon, and I was facing Walter Clayton. Clayton completely no-shows. Yeah. Cryer played well, and then Condon had enough, so I won that. I was in a numbers pool, which I won. But again, Houston winning would have been very good for me.
Florida winning was
very good for
me.
The bomb.
And I do want to give credit to Tim. Tim did not hedge. I was saying...
Don't give him credit for
don't
that.
Don't give me credit.
Because
when he wasn't responding to the text last night, he wasn't feeling real good about it, including right up until 3 minutes left.
When we were texting him, asking me,
you should have seen when I was texting about Beltway Ben in a different stream behind your back.
Yeah.
It's like this
sitting in the fetal position.
$200 in free money could have turned into easy $800, but, and he'd have nothing to worry about either way.
As somebody who was telling him, as someone who was telling him to hedge, I didn't because I was so confident.
But you were committed to the bid. There was no bid here.
He was dying.
Oh, I was totally. I was pacing for easily the last 7-8 minutes of that game. I had the O's on my laptop, and then this had a lot.
Probably
of
on an illegal stream.
Yeah,
it was an illegal stream. Yes.
I was watching the game on TV, and the Orioles on my phone. Yeah,
come get me.
Well, now that you're sitting on some cash in the phone,
maybe.
Be careful.
Way to give that away. Way to give that away, Bone.
You're gonna have to give it all to the FCC.
Yeah.
Now. Yeah. Does FCC? Is there still an FCC? I don't know. Has that been dismantled? I didn't read the papers today.
I think it's still around.
Still exists.
I do want to say one thing that I mentioned it off the air, but one of the funniest things I've seen are all these people putting out their they're too soon top 25 in college basketball.
Stupid.
How does anyone know who's on anyone's team with the portal? Like, guys are leaving, people transfer. Like, I don't know who's on anyone's roster. How could you put together a top 25?
It makes no sense.
You could put anything on Twitter, bro.
John Ralstein has a top 45.
I saw that.
He's really tied.
I saw that.
Terps didn't make it. There's six guys they have, or five guys, or whatever
you
want to
call. Were they in others receiving votes?
No, they weren't.
Did a top 45. Like,
that's ridiculous.
Tell me the starting 45. Why don't you do a top 350?
Can you name the starting five of any of those teams?
I can tell you right now that our boy G-Unit has power rankings. G-Unit can tell you who the 256th best team, or worst, depending how you're looking at it, in Division I men's basketball. Basketball is right now.
Gee.
Like, I almost feel like in the dead of July, like the week of the All-Star break, we're like, G-Unit, okay, if Morgan was hosting Florida State right now on a neutral court, what would your line and total be?
He'd have it.
He could compute it.
He's got a real simulator.
He does.
Yes.
He'd also have Morgan State's walk-ons points per game in high school somehow.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
By the way, walk-ons getting phased out of college basketball. They're like there will not be walk-ons, and it'll be all scholarship athletes.
Really?
Pete Thamel was talking about that last night. This whole thing is changing in the world of there'll be 15 players and they'll all be scholarship athletes. So something interesting to pay attention to. Hey, coming up next, purple rain in the forecast. We are 16 days away from the start of the NFL draft, and the Ravens have picks, baby, 11 of them. So what position could the Ravens decide to double down on in the draft? We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.